morning. You may be seated. Justice Pfeiffer is ill, and he will not be participating in the oral arguments here, but he's going to watch them on his computer at home, so he will be participating in the decisions in the cases we hear today. The first case is 06189, Al Uden, Administrator of the Estate of Shayla Uden, deceased, Embassy Suites Hotel. Mr. Markworth.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Dale Markworth, and with me is Amy Phillips, and we're here on behalf of the appellants. I ask to reserve 5 minutes of time to respond to the appellee's arguments, and I understand I will be responsible for that. The appellants ask this court to reverse the 10th District Court of Appeals and hold that the Embassy Suites Hotel swimming pool was an open and obvious danger of which even a child of 10 years old, such as Shayla Uden, should be aware, and that this court affirm the trial court's granting of summary judgment on behalf of the defendant's appellants. The principal issue in conflict that we believe in this case is the lower court opinions on whether the open and obvious doctrine applies where there has been noncompliance with an administrative rule. In this case, we have the 10th District Court of Appeals looking to the 1st District Court of Appeals in the Francis case and applying a noncompliance or violation of an administrative rule as barring or dissolving the defense of open and obvious danger. On the other hand, we have the more majority of courts, the 2nd, the 6th, the 8th, the 9th, the 12th courts, in cases of which we've cited, that hold that the Chambers case, Chambers versus St. Mary's School, should not be read, either directly or implicitly, that the fact that there is an administrative rule that has been violated bars the application of the open and obvious doctrine.
Could I clarify one thing? That in the briefs, in your brief, you seem to argue that admission of that administrative rule would be negligence per se, but I didn't. That's not what the Court of Appeals held, and it doesn't seem to be what the appellee is arguing. That's just a matter of negligence. It's an evidence. It's a bit of evidence to indicate that Embassy Suites may have been negligent, but not negligent per se. Can you
clarify? That is correct, Your Honor. The Court of Appeals did rule in this case that what it would be evidence of negligence. Well, they actually didn't rule that it would be evidence of negligence. They construed it as being a negligence. And I think the problem in this case is with reference to the actual syllabus in the St. Mary's case, Chamber St. Mary's. That syllabus, it was the violation of an administrative rule, does not constitute negligence per se. However, such a violation may be admissible evidence of negligence. And what happened, as I see it, is twofold. One, the clear meaning of that ruling, and in the context of the Chambers case, has been misconstrued by the 10th and the 1st District. And two, in so doing, they've even not applied the underlying law that resulted in the decision in the Chambers case. For example, in the Francis case, they hold that a violation of an administrative rule is construed or considered to be negligence, and therefore they create the duty, and once they create the duty, they then argue two things. Open and obvious cannot apply, and they argue that, well, if we did hold that it was that it applied, it would render effective these administrative rules as a nullity. I don't read the syllabus in the Chambers case as saying that. What I read in the Chambers case is that in this case, you had a violation of the Ohio Building Code. You had a statute, not an administrative, or you had an administrative rule that was cited by experts in the Chambers case. But the plaintiffs in that case argued that that administrative rule should be interpreted as creating negligence per se. That was a conflict. That was the rule that was, or the principal issue was being decided in that case. And the court went on in chambers and explained the difference between public policy established by elected representatives in the legislature and creating a specific safety duty of which a jury could find a simple fact and say then there's a violation and that constitutes negligence per se, versus the administrative rule, which emanates from the various boards, from the administrative agencies which have appointed directors, and that we should not interpret that or permit that to set public policy, particularly setting public policy as to what the proof requirements would be between litigants in a case. And secondly, as it noted in that case, the administrative rules are a complex set of rules, and that if we were to sit there and say that any violation of the administrative rule would per se obviate the open and obvious doctrine, we would make it impossible in many cases to be able to follow that. Many of these rules don't even have the semblance of the ordinary and reasonableness standard associated with them, and that was shown in footnote number 3, even in the Chambers case, when they cited the example of exterior stairways, where they're to be kept free of ice and snow.
How should we treat, then, the violation of the administrative violation in this case? The 10th District only said it shouldn't be a matter of summary judgment. It should go back for consideration by the trial court. So what would you have the rule of law be on a violation of an administrative regulation?
Well, I would have, in this case, and in the Chambers case, because I think the 10th District went further and actually said that it's a violation and that it constituted negligence in the case. In my opinion, looking at what the syllabus is in the Chambers case, which says it may be admissible as evidence of negligence, that presupposes, and in truth, there are cases where you do have not the open obvious doctrine, but you do have maybe a hidden defect, and under that scenario, yes, you can use a violation of an administrative rule as perhaps evidence of negligence.
Well, how do we write that in this case, though? We're dealing with milky water, cloudy water, whatever term you want to use. So what are you looking for here? I know you want to win.
Yeah,
I understand that part.
No, but what I want to have established here is that a violation of an administrative rule does not bar or obviate or dissolve the doctrine of an open and obvious danger. That's what I want.
That wouldn't be true in every case. Obviously, you suggested if we had a latent defect. This is a patent defect, a patent violation of a administrative regulation. Are we supposed to make that distinction?
Well, yes, because the open and obvious doctrine doesn't apply unless it's open and obvious.
You're saying the milky water is open and obvious.
Yes, I am, and in fact, we have cited a number of cases in here about the fact that it's obvious that a child, even a child of tender years, would recognize the danger involved with drowning and under a number of different circumstances. And even if you want to talk about milky and cloudy, at least we cited the Kentucky Grimes case, which held that milky and cloudy water is not a case of where you can't apply the open and obvious doctrine.
You didn't say this in your brief, and I guess maybe it's because you don't think it's a strong argument, but there were adults or their parents of this young girl were there, were they not? Do we know where they were? You don't argue it was open and obvious to an adult in your brief. If you did, I missed it.
Well, it certainly is open and obvious to an adult.
But you're resting on the premise that it's open and obvious to a 10-year-old child also.
Yes, Your Honor.
How would the child I mean, a child might see that this water is different than water I've usually seen in a pool in a hotel, but the issue here is that if someone is having trouble, they're underwater, maybe deep underwater, and there's a lifeguard or somebody is there watching, they can't see her. They can't tell that she's having trouble or that she's been there underwater for some period of time and needs help. Is a 10-year-old able to process all that, you think?
I believe that a 10-year-old can process the dangers involved with drowning in water, and including water that's milky. I believe we've demonstrated even that in the Sharpley case, where we've said that, you know, it's known that there's a danger of drowning in pools, in streams, in ponds. These are even dark water bodies. And I don't think that this is a matter that you can compartmentalize down to the absolute particular instance of what may have happened in this case. I think that the fact that a 10-year-old child can see what's there and can appreciate the danger of drowning, and even with milky and cloudy water. And I think these courts have held so. And further, I think in this case that this issue that we got to is an issue of attempting to say that there was evidence of a timely rescue and that the rescue was foiled. But in the evidence is there are no witnesses of her floundering or anything of that sort or drowning, nor in this case is there this complete evidence that she couldn't possibly be seen. Even Tony Lemming came out of the spa, saw her at the bottom of the pool and went into the pool, and he is the one who pulled her out from the pool.
Counselor, did you say he saw her in the bottom of the pool?
Yeah, I believe so.
Because I recollect that he had to move around and feel the bottom of the pool.
Before he went into the pool, he saw her. I believe that was what it was.
All right. I'll check the record, but that's
sure.
Not my recollection.
Okay. But our point in here is that if this court were to adopt the meaning as given to it by the 10th District and the 1st District in St. Francis, that in fact it would be an impossible burden on every landowner. I would even refer you to the to an analogous situation in Bennett versus Staley when this court adopted the attractive nuisance doctrine. Even in adopting the attractive nuisance doctrine, it was made clear in that decision that the landowner still could obviate that duty if in fact the condition was obvious and should be aware of and known by a child. So it's the same thing in here. You cannot take away, in my estimation, the open and obvious doctrine by reason of finding that a violation of a rule, administrative rule, is or may be admissible as evidence of negligence. I see it both ways in the other cases we talked about, such as in the Bay case. And the Bay case is an example of a minor who drowned in a pool. So how does that involve the administrative rules? Well, they went through a whole bunch of administrative rules on that. I see it as both ways. In that case, because the child was I believe, 6 in that case, we weren't talking about open and obvious.
So, Counselor, you would have the court rule as a matter of law that this 10-year-old was cognizant enough to appreciate the dangers of murky water, and therefore the open and obvious doctrine comes into play. Is that
Yes. Basically
what you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
I would
say that. I would say that this Shayla Uden was a 10-year-old. She could read. There were instructions that were there, including the fact that there's no lifeguard on duty, that you swim at your own risk, and that children are to be accompanied by adults. I would emphasize that Shayla Uden knew that she did not know how to swim in this case, and that she understood that there was a danger in this pool and going in.
I understand your argument at the outset that you drew a distinction between an administrative violation that might be a latent defect as opposed to a non-latent defect in the condition of the premises?
What I was drawing the distinction before is when can an administrative rule have a part in a case such as a drowning in a swimming pool? And my point there and in other cases were, if the latent defect is not open and obvious under that circumstance, then the administrative rules can come in, as this court has said, and may be admissible as evidence of negligence. And in the Bay case, it was just the flip side. They had all the administrative rules that came in, and it was actually evidence of non-negligence.
Does that push our decision then to whether or not the violation of the administrative regulation becomes latent?
Well, it's latent, but there would be another scenario. And the other scenario would be in the case of where you don't have the open and obvious doctrine. And we have a child of 6 years old in the Bay case.
But that was a regular swimming pool.
Right.
All right, we're talking about the intervening fact here of milky, clouded water that precluded an adult, and there was an adult supervising, from viewing a child submerged at the bottom of the swimming pool. And you would say that this violation of the administrative code, that the water condition was as such, which is a violation, doesn't affect it at all. It still is an open and obvious impediment, and the child should appreciate it, the total package.
Yes.
So it's not enough that the child just appreciated the fact that, oh, there's water and I might drown, as any child, you know, of that age would, but had to process the fact that not only might I drown, but nobody will see me if I go under this water. Is that what you're asking the child to appreciate?
I'm asking that, and I'm asking also that in this case, what we've also done on the alternative theory, that there is not substantial evidence to sit there and say that there was a delay in rescue as a proximate cause. But that's not addressing your point, Your Honor, that you've just given to me.
Thank you, Mr. Markworth. Mr. Edwards.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, Mr. Chief Justice. On behalf of the Udens, we would come to this court and simply request that the 10th Appellate District's decision be affirmed, this case be remanded to the trial court so that a jury, not a judge, can decide this issue. As we noted in our brief, we believe there is substantial evidence that there was a violation of the Ohio Administrative Code, clear evidence of that. In fact, I would submit that it's interesting or curious that there's not one piece of evidence, not one affidavit from anyone who worked at Embassy Suites that night who came forward and testified that the water was clear. The evidence is clear that the water was cloudy, that it was murky, and that because of that, there was a delay in finding, in fact, in trying to rescue and save Shayla Uden. The evidence is not that Mr. Lemming saw the young girl at the bottom of the pool. The evidence is that somebody determined that she may have been missing, and that when Mr. Lemming jumped in, they could not see her at the bottom of the pool, but rather they were feeling around for her with their hands and with their feet. And this was from an affidavit from Mr. Lemming's wife, who testified in her affidavit that she could not see the body of 10-year-old Shayla Uden at the bottom of the pool. Now, I am not standing up here asking this court to abolish the open and obvious doctrine. That doctrine is sound. although at times I may disagree with it, it is a sound doctrine and has tremendous public policy benefits. But on the other hand, the administrative code and this court's decision in Chambers versus St. Mary's is also bedrocked upon a fundamental public policy. There is a reason why we have an administrative code in the state of Ohio. It's to ensure the safety of its citizens, and that the legislators have determined, and even though this court said that a violation of the code is not negligence per se, the reason why you have the administrative code is so that certain agencies can make and promulgate rules to ensure the safety of the citizens. And I would ask the court that when you have a violation of the Ohio Administrative Code, that that in and of itself, as the court said in Chambers, is sufficient for an inference of negligence, and as a result, that should be a carved out exception to the open and obvious doctrine. And one of the examples I would use, and this is a little bit of a different area, but this court in the mid to late 80s and early 90s oftentimes stated, look, Ohio is an employment at will state, but there are certain exceptions that we carve out if in fact the discharge violates public policy. For example, if somebody is fired because they were a whistleblower, if somebody's fired because child support monies were withheld from their paycheck.
Counsel?
Yes. I'm sorry.
If sometimes we have to worry about what I call the law of unintended consequences, how a decision in one case affects others.
Yes.
Generally, we've had a rule that swimming pools are open and obvious, and children swim at their own risk, and parents have an obligation to watch, which didn't happen here. An 18-year-old did it. If we allow the evidence of murkiness to come in as evidence of negligence, how does that apply to other bodies of water that are open and obvious, like a stream or a pool or a pond that is naturally darker or muddy or has sediment? How does that affect it?
You know, I think, first off, and I believe that in this case, Shayla Uden was clearly a business invitee. There's no doubt that she was invited on the premise. There was a birthday party that evening.
Okay, let's put that fact pattern in. You're on someone's property and there's a pool, a pond out there that just rained and it's muddy. They're an invitee.
Right. Well, I first off, I don't believe that there's any requirement under the Ohio Administrative Code to render a pond or a stream. There's no requirement that be a certain visibility. So if you would have a pond on your property, if a hotel, oftentimes we see hotels with ponds on their property, there's no requirement that that water has to be clear. In fact, again, I'm not a scientist or anything like that, but I'm not even sure if a stream or a pond could be rendered clear and visible. Obviously, we all know that under the Ohio Administrative Code, swimming pools are required and they're able to be made clear.
So it's the expectation that the public has coming into the hotel that the pond, that the pool will be clear. There's a determining factor between the outside lake on a property.
Well, I think first off, it's the duty, if anything, and to some degree, I think it is the public has an expectation when a hotel like Embassy Suites is having an indoor pool and it's inviting children onto the premise so they can use the pool for a birthday party, that there is an expectation, although the public may not know every provision within the Ohio Administrative Code, they may have an expectation, it may be foreseeable, it may be expected, there's a duty on Embassy Suites to make sure the pool is clear and it follows the Administrative Code. And in this case, it's very, very clear that the Embassy Suites violated the Administrative Code. So I would ask this court that although in some cases a pool can be an open and obvious condition, and again, as I mentioned, that doctrine that this court set forth again in Armstrong versus Best Buy, that is a legitimate public policy doctrine. But on the other hand, you also have the Ohio Administrative Code.
So, counsel, basically, the responsibility here is to maintain an open and obvious condition and not make it any more worse. In other, that's what the reg is all about here, is that this is an inherently dangerous, although acceptable, risk here, and that is to swim in water. And you have a duty as the owner, unlike a pond owner, to not make it any worse.
Well, exactly. And again, in response to Justice Stratton's question, and tying in with you, Justice O'Connor, is that most of the time people, when they come onto premises, whether it's a hotel, whether it's a residence, if there's a pond, kids are not expected to be swimming in that pond. Here, the pool itself was something that was attracting guests so that you could have a swimming pool, you had a game room next to it, and so that kids could come onto the premise. If this occurred, the record's clear, it happened at the end of April. I think we all can agree that normally in the end of April in Columbus, Ohio, you don't have too many outdoor pools that are open, so this is attracting people onto the premise. And I would just submit that when you have these two public policy concerns, you have the administrative code on one hand, and you have this open and obvious doctrine, I believe that the court has to defer to a violation of the administrative code, that it creates an inference of negligence. So as I was giving my example about the employment at will doctrine, this court has looked at doctrines before, like the employment at will, and carved out exceptions.
Mr. Edwards, is there a violation of the administrative code here?
Justice O'Donnell, I think it's clear that there is a...
clear is just a milky word in this case, so wouldn't you agree?
Well, I think the evidence, and again, you know, we're...
Has there been a citation?
Yes, Your Honor, there has been. It's like 37, it's 3701-31-07C. It's in the Court of Appeals decision, and it's cited throughout, and it deals with whether or not a 6-inch black disc, I don't know, is that like a hockey puck or something like that, if it can be seen at the bottom of the pool.
Yes.
And in our affidavit,
but
that...
What is your response then to the argument, if I understand Mr. Markworth's position, that anyone would know if they were submerged into this cloudy, milky water, they would not be visible to an individual observing from a platform? That would appear to be obvious that you could conceal yourself if you would go beneath the surface of the water.
Sure. Justice O'Donnell, my response to appellant's argument is I would disagree with it. And I would ask the court to again review Judge Bryan's concurring opinion in the 10th Appellate District, because I believe she addresses this issue to the point. She cites a 1969 case, DeGildo versus Capone, which talks about how children of tender years are treated differently under Ohio tort law. And I think recently, within the last 4 or 5 years, we saw in Bennett versus Stanley, where this court adopted the attractive nuisance doctrine. And I would, just as an aside, if you look at that case, that is a case in which this court stated that a trespassing child, that there is a duty to a premise owner to a child of tender years that's trespassing. Here, we're asking that a duty be bestowed upon the premise owner, not for a trespassing child, but for a child who's a business invitee. But Justice O'Donnell, what I would submit to you is that a child of tender years, can recognize that a pool is a dangerous condition. A child understands that I could drown in the pool. But as Justice Bryant noted in her concurring opinion, I think Justice O'Connor, you seem by some of your questions, again, I don't want to infer too much, but it seems like you have some concerns, that can a child of 10 years of age, can she appreciate the fact that, okay, sure, I know a pool's dangerous, but can she appreciate that if I would go under, if I would bump my head, if somebody would strike me accidentally, if I would swallow water, if I would go under, that because of the murkiness and the cloudiness, that I could not be seen, and as a result, any type of rescue attempts would be thwarted?
That's the legal, I wanted to get you to, how would you define the legal issue that we have to decide here?
Well, Your Honor, I think, and this is the complexity of this case, Your Honor. I think if there wasn't this violation of the administrative code, then, and as Justice Breyer, in her concurring opinion, she talks very little about the OAC violation.
We would still have the issue of whether, under the open and obvious doctrine, there are these exceptions that open and obvious, except
right.
that the owner of the premises cannot create a condition that is concealed or is dangerous that is not obvious, and that essentially, I think, is Justice Bryant's point that she makes when she concurs, is that to a 10-year-old, to an adult, murky water is open and obvious. But to a 10-year-old, we don't know. And the 10-year-old obviously is not here to testify. And so the 10th District says go back to the trial, have a trial to determine whether this was an exception to the open and obvious. I think that's the gist of their opinion.
Exactly, Chief Justice. And in fact, Justice Bryant, she says it so far better than I, but she says that a hidden defect, or she states that the nature of the hazard serves as a warning. The nature of the hazard serves as a warning. But in this case, I would submit that as she describes it, this is a hidden danger. This is not something, if you look at all the attendant circumstances, you have a 10-year-old, there are, 10 or 15 other kids, it's a birthday party, that to somehow assume or to that a 10-year-old is going to not only understand that a pool is dangerous, I'll agree with, to say that a 10-year-old would understand this hidden danger and all the possible consequences, to appreciate it, again, I think that really it kind of is contrary to a lot of cases that this court has issued over the years.
Mr. Markworth argues that on this point that the Court of Appeals opinion seems to have concluded that the hotel was negligent and that you can combining the administrative rule, the fact that they apparently violated the administrative rule, and the condition of the water the court has concluded that there was negligence. Do you agree with his conclusion about the Court of Appeals opinion?
Well, I believe the Court of Appeals, per Judge Petrie, found that there was a violation of the administrative code. I think that's very clear that Judge Petrie made that finding, and I think that
it seemed. What do you think the Court of Appeals opinion is with respect to the impact of that finding on this case?
Well, I would submit that what the Court of Appeals is following is the Francis decision from the First District, where I think what Judge Petrie and to some degree Judge Bryant, that what they were saying was that whenever you have a violation of the Ohio Administrative Code, that somehow nullifies or that is an exception to the open and obvious doctrine.
Counsel, you have three separate opinions here by the Court of Appeals. And I had my question and I lost it. I'm concerned about the administrative code violation itself. Are you saying that, okay, we're talking about cloudiness or visibility in a pool, that it can be open and obvious to an adult and yet latent to a child? Is that what you're saying? Because really it seems to me that the Court of Appeals said this is not a case for summary judgment. We're going to send it to the trial court where these issues can be determined. Liability will be determined there. If they were to apply open and obvious, there would be no duty, and obviously then you do lose. So is that what they're saying, that the administrative code could be viewed as latent to a child, but visible to the adult?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Justice, my time is up.
Sure, you can finish.
Justice Lanzinger, I would agree with that, is that what the Court of Appeals is saying is that there are certain conditions that may violate the administrative code. They may be administrative violations, but they're still open and obvious, meaning like no handrails down a flight of stairs. That's open and obvious. However, in this case, what I would submit to you that through Judge Petrie, but also through Judge Bryant, what Judge Bryant's saying is that the violation here, not only is it a violation of the code, but it also creates a hidden defect
But the cloudiness is open and obvious. The violation in and of itself is there. You can see it. The murkiness of the water you can see, but it's the appreciation by the minor that you're talking about, isn't it?
Exactly, right. It's there's no doubt that the murkiness of the water was open and obvious because, I mean, obviously I had two homicide detectives and a woman whose husband tried to rescue Shayla testify that it was murky. The issue is whether or not a child of tender years can appreciate that risk. And if the child of tender years, which I would submit, cannot appreciate that risk, then it does not obviate the premise owner's duty to either warn or to have a lifeguard there or to make render the water clear.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Edwards. Mr. Markworth, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. First off, the argument on the appellee's side is turning the administrative code into a public policy statement. And that is, he's expressly argued that the administrative code is an expression of public policy, and I say that that is just contrary to what this court held in Chambers, that it is not an expression of public policy, and that a violation of this should not be treated as it has in the 10th District Court, which makes the property owner an absolute insurer when it says in the 10th District Court that a violation of administrative code may be admissible as evidence of negligence. And as such, it obviates and then takes away the open and obvious doctrine. And that's what this court should make clear definitely for all the lower courts, that a violation of an administrative code does not take away the open and obvious doctrine itself. So that's our position in this case. We go further because we also say that in the case of open and obvious doctrine, as in Armstrong versus Best Buy, it goes to the threshold question of duty. That generally is a matter of law, and although some courts have argued that ought to be decided by a judge, even this court in Robinson versus Bates suggested that can be a question for a jury. But in our position in this case, we believe that it's been a well-settled decision in courts throughout Ohio and courts in other states that, in this case, the drowning of a 10-year-old child, such as Shayla Uden, is the consequence of an open and obvious danger.
Thank you, Mr. Markworth. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.